about the hurricane that's a coming, and it's already hitting actually like North Carolina and all that. You know, it gets me. And you know, keep in mind, it's a bad storm, big storm, devastating storm. It's going to be pretty bad. The water damage and the flooding issue, that's pretty much the worst of it. The winds, too, you know, you can figure in. But I will say this, man. The Weather Channel, I get their end of it, that they have to hype it, right? That's all they do. They are the Weather Channel. So, I mean, basically, it's what you got, the weather. And you can't really, if the weather's nice, what are you going to say? The weather's nice. You know what I mean? Hi, this is Michael Angley with the Weather Channel. The weather is nice. You know what I mean? Like, no. People want to hear, there's Category 4, hurricane. It's going to kill you all. You know what I mean? You better look out. There's going to be a storm surge taller than your house, and it's going to wipe everybody off the planet. So people are like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. They run to the store. They buy all the alcohol, some water, of course, and a lot of Doritos that you have to have with your alcohol. And they hunker down, or they take off. And, you know, the people who are smart stay away from areas that get easily flooded. If you live in a floodplain, if you're in an area that's prone to flood, yeah, you got to get the hell out of there, man. You know, you stay around. The problem is the ones who especially older people, a lot of older people who have, like, oh, I've seen these storms and they're no big deal and whatever. Yes and no. This storm came across the Atlantic. Now, the Atlantic is not as hot as the Gulf of Mexico or, you know, those waters anywhere around there, right? Where these storms basically form, you know, I mean, they come off really the coast of Africa, and then they follow the equator. It's hot water. They gain all the strength. But it's been my experience that if you have storms that are 4 or 5 and they lose strength, you know, they go up the Atlantic, they're going to lose strength. They're going to hit colder water. And then when they get towards warmer water, they could gain strength or whatever. And there's also like where this hurricane is coming on land, there's a big shelf there. You know, the Atlantic shelf is there, and that makes the storm surge water compress, you know. So as a storm comes in, all that storm surge, all the water the storm is pushing, just from the winds and just from the power of it, you know, you're talking about an unbelievable storm surge in some cases. You could have storm surges, sure, 9, 10, you know, 15 feet tall. And so at one point, it was 80-foot waves, you know, that's the headline I saw off the Weather Channel. This storm's like 5 days out. Watching a hurricane is like watching a turtle walk to you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I have friends overseas. One of my friends in Australia, and they call them cyclones there. He's like, hey, you get that cyclone that you were talking about 5 days ago? No, not yet. No, well, when are you going to get it? Probably going to be around, you know, Thursday. This is on Monday. He's like, man, taking a long time. But the Weather Channel hypes it. And my problem with that is that it scares people. And when people get scared, they panic. You know, maybe they buy stuff they don't need or whatever. They try to prepare for things, whatever, man. So I wish they wouldn't talk about the worst case scenario and harp on it and just talk about, hey, this could happen or this could happen. The storm could lose strength or it could gain strength, yeah. But listen, then watching their faces on the Weather Channel guys, right? Look, like when the storm is a 4 or 5, and they're like showing the panic, you know, like that fake panic. It's like fake outrage, you know. And they're like, ooh, it's coming in, you know, and oh, it's going to be dangerous. And they got their guys. First thing they do is say, don't go out in the storm. Go to a shelter. Stay away from the storm waters, all that stuff, right? Then they go to the guy who's in the middle of the storm, you know? Oh, because they're a meteorologist, they belong there. Because I was told earlier by one of my friends, she's like, well, they're taking scientific readings. I'm like, no, they're not. The equipment does that. These guys are just sitting around. You know how many drones we got? You don't have to risk a human being. People want to see it. People want to see it. People are bloodthirsty. They want to see Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel out there at a huge hurricane, 140-mile-an-hour winds. He's trying to stand up. They want to see a Volvo crushing. Ah, look at Jim Cantore guy crushed by a Volvo. Oh, my God, I remember when that happened. It was September. I remember. He's gone. And people be like, oh, poor Jim Cantore. Oh, man. Weather fatality. Jim Cantore. His last words were, oh, my God. I remember that. They'll play that 80, 90 times. Oh, my God. Crush. You know what I mean? Oh, man. Those Volvos are really made well. Crush. Jim Cantore is still under the Volvo. You know, there's 13-foot floodwaters there where he was. And the only people the Weather Channel would be concerned with is who gets his job, who gets to move forward. Take Jim, because Jim Cantore has been in there like herpes. Who's gonna move forward on Jim Cantore? That's what people want to see, and that's why they all go out there. And that's why they get blown around. You see, I want to be like the Weather Channel resistor, man. I want to go out there with like honey and feathers. You know what I mean? Like, they probably wouldn't even need the honey. And just stand upwind of these guys as they're doing their broadcast and just, like, release a bunch of feathers, man. You know what I mean? Just, like, heckle the weather guy, man. Like, oh, my God, this guy here with feathers. But then, you know, it's a Category 2, and they're out there, and they're being blown around. I've seen them sensationalized, you know. I've seen them be blown around, blown to the left, blown to the right. I'm trying to stand in this wind. I can't hold on much longer. And then, like, some dude in his boxers, like, with a beard in his hand, walks behind the guy like, hi. You know? Hey. Very funny, man. So, and I got people like, you know, oh, my God, are you okay? I'm like, I'm in upstate New York. You know what happens upstate New York? Not much. You know, yeah, we get our snowstorms. The hurricane's coming this way. It will be here by Tuesday, they say. Tuesday, it's going to curve and do a big U-turn and head upstate New York, my direction, Pennsylvania. Now, Pennsylvania doesn't need it, man. They have so much flooding there. Oh, my God. It's been a very wet summer. Usually summer's dry around here, July, August, very dry months, man. It's been wet here, too. But been wet here, too, not as bad as south of here. It's been terrible. So, like, when the ground gets saturated and it rains, there's nowhere for the water to go. So it just runs off and makes flooding. It causes floods, you know. So, you know, this storm is probably going to dump a foot of rain as it comes through. Nobody needs that. And then the winds are going to be, like, sustained 25, 30 miles an hour, somewhere around there. So it makes it difficult. But it's kind of good in a way, like where I live, because we do get winters. And there are ice storms this place gets and all kinds of weather, you know. And sometimes snow falls, it'll be heavy and take down tree branches and trees, knock them down. So when you have a storm come through like this that's really windy, it kind of loosens everything up at the point where the weather's not so bad that if the power goes out for any length of time, people aren't going to suffer, you know what I mean? So it sort of gets the weak trees out of the way and it reinforces that. So you got to look at the good part of it, but the bad part is that people do get flooded and it sucks, you know. Anyway, talking about things that suck, man, let's talk about Twitter for a minute. Now, Twitter has a whole list of things that they won't allow on their service. And Twitter is a big, huge corporation. Everybody knows Twitter, right? In fact, Donald Trump saved Twitter. Twitter was dying. Donald Trump came in, and since he didn't have a sleep, he's like, I don't know, some kind of weird daytime, nighttime vampire. He sits there and tweets at night. I don't think he tweets as much as he used to, or I'm not seeing it. But I can see him there, his presidential, you know, pajamas, tweeting, whatever he sees off Fox TV, that pisses him off. He'll go on there and tweet. But Twitter has banned the phrase illegal alien. And they banned it as hate speech. So they're leading the charge into this weirdness that illegal alien is hate speech. Now, if you come into this country or any country illegally, you are an illegal alien. alien. You're not from there. Illegal. You shouldn't have gone there. You broke the law. Now, every federal form that talks about this type of stuff mentions illegal aliens. They don't say illegal immigrant. State, federal, schools, illegal alien. Are you an alien? It says, are you an alien? And then, yeah, I just landed here like an hour ago from planet Uranus because Uranus was getting kind of hot, kind of bad, kind of stinky. And I came to this beautiful Earth, man, and now I'm applying for welfare because I'm an illegal alien. Maybe they're an illegal visitor. You ever think of that? I'm here. I just came over the border for an extended stay. I'll leave the day after I die. Thank you. So stupid, right? Illegal alien, and they're going to make it hate speech and start kicking people off. Now, Twitter allows other people to call people Nazis all day long. Nazis? You can call a dude a Nazi because he's conservative or something? I mean, that's I think you could probably say, all right, hey, dude, you're acting like a Nazi. But Nazis are a specific type of creature, you know? And they're out there, let me tell you, and they don't have the power that they once had because of the good old USA, you know? Because we got involved. We didn't have to get involved, but we did. And then, you know what? And England is our brothers, man. You know? Like, France. You see, France is weird. There was a big French resistance, and a lot of people didn't like the Nazis, but they were, like, submissive to it in a way, you know? And they didn't have a choice either. But England put up a big fight, and England was getting bombed all the time. A lot of people don't realize that England got bombed a lot. There are unsafe areas, and there's air raids, and they didn't know what was going on. And then we got pulled into the war from World War II, you know, and it was a choice. Before that, we weren't going to get involved necessarily. They were considering it, but then Pearl Harbor happened, and then boom, you know, Japan joined the fight. Pearl Harbor happened. They attacked us, destroyed a lot of ships and kill people, blah, blah, blah. All that, right? A lot of people said that, you know, it was a known thing, but they kept it from a lot of people in the government and people out there. They wanted it to be a surprise because they wanted Congress and all that to vote to go to war. Anyway, we did. They did. We did. We went in there, and it was a battle, you know, World War II, man. And it was a worthy battle because you were fighting a madman. You were fighting Adolf Hitler. You were fighting somebody who exterminated millions of people, women, children, put them in, you know, these ovens or put them in these gas camps and just gassed them, took their clothes and gassed them. I mean, the atrocities, the things that happened that Hitler did and you know, Goering and Goebbels, all these people who did such terrible things, the SS, you know, I mean, they... The Gestapo, they went out there and they just basically did what they wanted to do to people. You know, they took Jewish people and skinned them alive and made lampshades out of their skin. So keeping all this in mind, and this is the mild stuff. This is mild, mild. You know, in one case, one of these guys had come down with a condition, medical condition, and then these Nazi doctors went to work on these women. They took over 170 women and they dissected them alive and basically infected them and, you know, tried to, like, they just used them as, you know, human, you know, test subjects without a care for them, their families, their any love and passion and nothing. They weren't human. They were subhuman. They were just something that to be used. I mean, horrible. Now, to call a Republican today a Nazi, or to call Trump Hitler, is like really disgraceful. And I'm not defending Trump or Republicans. I'm defending the people that were the victims of Nazis. And you know what? not everything is done right in Trump's administration. That's for damn sure. And not everything was done right for a long time. We haven't had a really good president in a long time, a real leader, somebody who actually was pretty well balanced in understanding the world and had good advisors who were loyal and trustworthy. And this is the problem. This is my problem with Trump. This is the problem with him. You know what Trump's problem is? I'm going to break it down psychologically. I'm going to analyze his mother right now. Right now. I'm going to say, give me some of that sweet Trumpy stuff. Come on. I'm going to analyze you. All right, I'll get serious. Donald Trump is one of the most insecure individuals that's out there. And he's a billionaire. He's a very powerful person. And when you have a powerful, insecure person, it's a bad mix. It's a cocktail of disaster, right? Now, because of this, a lot of his policies are actually good policy. And hey, man, he said George Bush was part of 9/11. Like, you know, he knew about it. He could have prevented it. He was the only one to say that. All you libs out there, all you progressives out there who hate Trump and you love to hate him, good, that's fine. It's your prerogative, and I won't argue with you. I will not argue with what your virtue says to you. But I will say that this dude is going after the World Trade Organization, the IMF, the World Court, all these people who appointed themselves as the judge, jury, convictioner, and controller of society. This dude wants to bring them down. And I'm like, damn, when he said that about 9/11, I lost friends in 9/11. I lost John Sherry, who was my town Rockville Center lost 37 people. Put it that way. A lot of people that I grew up with, some of them I didn't know. Some of them I just knew by seeing them in school. Or I knew their siblings. A lot of it was like, hey, this guy's older brother got killed, you know. But John Sherry, man, I mean, we were in kindergarten together. This dude and I hung out, chilled out for years and years. You know, we smoked cigarettes together for the first time. We drank a beer together. Gone. And then Islam did that. Islamophobic bullcrap. Muslims did that. Islam. Without Islam, those twin towers would still be there. And a lot of people would be alive. Not just from them, from all these terrorist attacks over the years. But okay, Trump was the only one that said that Bush had knowledge and he could have stopped it, and Condoleezza Rice, and it was, hey man, Robert Mueller from the FBI who is doing this investigation now. Robert Mueller and George Tenet from the CIA went to George W. when he was on his ranch in Crawford, Texas, jerking off the whole summer, doing nothing, getting photo ops of him cutting trees down with a chainsaw. That's when he choked on these pretzels. It's a funny story. But he was eating pretzels and he started choking. Like, he almost choked to death. So every month I would mail him a bag of pretzels. Eat up. And I got like two letters from the Secret Service saying stop and desist the harassment of the president, which made me proud. Honestly, and I switched to garlic knots. I stepped up my game, my snacking game, you know, pretzels to garlic knots, mother. And I was an advocate for going after Bush and Cheney for all these years still, because they didn't act. But George Tenet and Robert Mueller both said that they went to Crawford, Texas, because Bush was not reading his security reports every morning like he was supposed to. Instead, he was doing nothing, partying, laughing, that he became president, that this idiot became president. And then Robert Mueller and George Shannon had to go from D.C., private aircraft, fly to Crawford, Texas, to deliver the intelligence reports by word, by lips, their lips. Orally, Bill Clinton style. And then he would just giggle and laugh and act like an idiot. you know, I mean, like Bush is like a 12-year-old, you know, and I couldn't even believe it. And I know that we needed a banging president after him. We need, after 8 years of Bush, because John Kerry ran against him that second time around, and Kerry was too busy on his yacht, playing around, skiing down mountains, and, hey, look at me, I'm running for president on these skis, not going to meetings, not meeting people, not talking from his heart. Yeah, John Kerry, him, useless rich boy. Hines, he's Hines money and Forbes money. You know where I know where John Kerry comes from? Hines and Forbes, man. Dude's got bucks. During the campaign, he re-registered his big-ass yacht to another area up there in New England to save taxes because he didn't want to pay his fair share. You know, the rich Democrats that talk all their crap, right? So then Robert Mueller and George Tenet go, and this is August at this point, early August. They go to Condoleezza Rice, right, who was Secretary of Security, National Security at that time. Who Condoleezza Rice was an oil executive. You want to know how things work? She was an oil executive. She has a super tanker named after her, right? She went from oil executive to, you know, director, or actually secretary of, you know, national security. So she tells them that the information is not viable. Here's George Tenet. Here's the head of the CIA and the FBI saying, we have information that Al-Qaeda, agents of Al-Qaeda are in flight schools looking to use airplanes against buildings in New York City and D.C. And she said, the information is not viable. Go tell Donald Rumsfeld. Now, Donald Rumsfeld, who is the head of a huge pharmaceutical company, now the head of our national defense, right? Secretary of Defense. He didn't care. He's like, well, it's not really my department, so to speak, and I'm busy over here. You know your Tamiflu? You know the Tamiflu people talk about when they're sick? Remember when SARS was going around and West Nile virus and all these other viruses, and they're like, well, you got to use Tamiflu. And this is when Bush was in there with Cheney and all them, right, and Donald Rumsfeld. You got to use Tamiflu. So Donald Rumsfeld was the head of the corporation that invented Tamiflu. And they still, even though a Swedish company bought it, they still have the rights. So every time you buy Tamiflu, some of that money goes in Donald Rumsfeld's pockets. So they bought millions and millions of doses of Tamiflu to fight various things as a stockpile for Americans, for you guys out there, for those lucky guys out there, in case you get some government-invented virus, they got something to cure you. You know? Pay us or die. Oh, I'm sorry you got the virus. We just happen to have something to cure it by chance. And the owner of it just happens to be the Secretary of Defense. Yeah, whatever, man. I was happy when Bush left. I still want the bastard in jail, along with the rest of the kit and caboodle of them, because I know that they knew about 9/11. No, I don't think they planned it. No, I don't think they plotted. I don't think those buildings were demolished. I know what people say. I know, you know what? Everybody's got their, you know what? I have a lot of friends who are conspiracy nuts, man. Nuts. Mixed nuts, right? Everything is a freaking conspiracy. You know? There's something behind everything, and everything is a conspiracy. All right. And I love the conspiracy next as much as the next person. I like to think, what if? I'm a private investigator. It's what I do for a living. Love to think, what if, or consider things, right? So, this is the deal. I'm going to tell you what happened with Twin Towers, man. It was ignored, and then these guys took these planes, they had box cutters, all the security that they have put in place since 9/11 today would not prevent another 9/11, just to let you know. So these guys knew the planes. They knew how to shut off the transponders so you couldn't track the planes. They chose the biggest planes with the most fuel, and they have their targets. And it's very easy to fly a plane at that point, especially when you've been in flight school, trained to fly a plane. They went aboard. They used their box cutters. And I think that even a lot of people, if they had really known what was up, they would have, you know, rose up against, there were more people on there than terrorists. They would have rose up against them and taken them out with their box cutters. You could only fight a little bit with a box cutter. You know, I'm a martial artist, man. And I'm going to tell you, your average person out there can be trained within a few minutes to at least avoid getting cut for the most part. And they, you know, take somebody out. Probably. Depends who they are. But I'm saying, you know, when you have a bunch of people together, I think that you can, you know, you can get that together anyway. But I'm not going to fault anybody because they know what was up, you know. And these guys were pretty smooth in what they did. They were planned out. They were calculating about it, you know. So these guys had their planes, and they smashed them into the Twin Towers, right? One plane, boom, another plane, boom. And now the Twin Towers, I'll tell you, when they built the Twin Towers, it was a controversial build because the main supports of the structure were on the outside. So it had an exoskeleton. An exoskeleton, whether it's on an insect or a building, is the supportive bones, the supportive structure is on the outside of the building, which gave it the look that it had, right? So all of the floors are now supported by the outside. So, you know, the center of the building is going to be the weakest part of the building because there's no supports necessarily that are holding anything up. No supports that you would need, like the Empire State Building is a building built with girders in a girder construction. So you have these huge steel I-beams and a lot of concrete all together holding this thing together. The Empire State Building supposedly could withstand a 727 hitting it, which was the largest plane at the time, when they constructed that building and its height, right? The Twin Towers were supposed to be able to withstand a bigger blast, but the Twin Towers, so in the middle of each tower was an electrical conduit, which is basically a hole that goes all the way down, mystifying to see if you see it in person. It was a hole that just went from all the way down, all the way up. So all the electrical lines, all the air lines, anything that they needed ran up and down that conduit, right? The planes hit the building. Jet fuel needs to spray before it burns. So if you don't spray jet fuel, and you could have a gallon of jet fuel in front of you right now and take a candle that has, you know, or any kind of flame and put it right out in it, and it's not going to explode. It doesn't have those fumes. It doesn't have the capability, and it's made with a lot of kerosene, so it has a whole different makeup, right? But gasoline, you can't do that. Try that with gasoline, and, you know, you're not going to be here anymore. You're going to be gone. But so the planes hit the building. All the debris from the planes, a lot of debris went, and people say they weren't planes and there was demolition. And, you know, you saw the planes hit the building. It wasn't CG. People saw it for real. People had videos of it. You saw the debris from these planes. And what's a plane? It's outer skin. It's seats, motors. There's not much to an airplane. They're big. They're impressive. They're huge. But there's a lot of space inside. If you were to take an airplane and compact it down, it wouldn't be very big in its real material state, you know? So the planes hit the building. The jet fuel goes through the building because it needs to spray to explode and to burn. It did because the planes hit the building and everything sprayed. And you saw the jet fuel start to burn. A lot of the fuel went down into that conduit. A lot of the debris went down into the conduit, making more of a mess. So when the buildings were on fire and the people were jumping out of this building, they were filming it while people were jumping out, committing suicide. Because they knew they were going to die, right? people inside on their phones who had called their loved ones who couldn't get out said they were that the walls were buckling. The outside exterior walls were bending, warping, buckling. They said one lady was like, it was like a piece of plastic on fire that was just bending. So it got its momentum, didn't it? The floors started to collapse because there was no girders in there, no construction that was going to keep them from it. The outside exoskeleton failed. And then they pancaked on top of one another. Boom, 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 boom. Now, the terrorists probably didn't think that was going to happen because they tried to do this before to the Twin Towers. They drove a truck with a 500-pound bomb in the basement of, I think it was Tower A, and blew it up. Right? That blind imam from New Jersey was behind that, who had ties to the rest of these crazy bastards. So their plan was to blow up this van, 500 pounds of explosives, which is nothing, honestly, to take down a building. No. But it would make a mess. It did. It caused a huge mess and killed people, sure. But their plan was to blow up this bomb and then collapse one tower into the next tower, releasing, because of the fire, cyanide gas that basically, you know, this after the Twin Towers had went down, and there was like my friends on Long Island said there was a pink like haze in the sky for weeks, and they didn't let people off of Long Island. You couldn't leave. The bridges were closed because I guess they were afraid they were going to bomb the bridges if they just wanted to contain it or keep people in. I know people who were in the city when the Twin Towers were attacked. And they were uptown. And they were uptown at a hotel that had the view where they could see what was going on. And then, and you want to hear a crazy 9/11 story? And it'd make a great movie, I have to say. Michael Jackson was still alive. Of course, and he had a show that night, I guess, at Madison Square Garden, you know. So he's in the city with his entourage, and he used to pal around with Grace Kelly and Marlon Brando. I don't know if people know that. So Marlon Brando, who was there for the show, and Grace Kelly also, were hanging out with Michael Jackson, and they were there. They were going to go to the show and party down and do their little thing, right, whatever. Now 9/11 happened. So Michael Jackson runs to their rooms. Grace Kelly knocks on her door and says, "Oh my God, this terrorist attack is doing the fall down. We got to get out of here." Right? Just like that, right? Then he goes to Marlon Brando's room, knocks on the door. He's sitting there and like a bucket of chicken. And he's like, "Marlon Brando, we got to get out of here. 9/11, we got to go." And he's like, "All right, let me finish this chicken. Let me finish this chicken, Mike. I'll be right with you." This is a true story. Not the chicken, but not the chicken, but a true story. The three of them, there's chaos. People are running and screaming everywhere. You know, you'd imagine in the city that you don't know what's happening. Now, well, we got tons of information, you know, but at that point, you didn't know if people were going to start crashing planes into all kinds of stuff. At some point, I kind of feel like hackers are going to be hacking into systems and crashing planes, that type of thing, man. So, see, it's a scary world, right? But when you're being attacked, the only information you have is the information that is present. Either the stuff you're taking in from what you're seeing and what's going on, or any kind of news source that's broadcasting and telling you, which they didn't know what was going on. The military didn't know what was going on. Then there was a no-fly thing. They shut down flights in the city and in the country for a couple days, right? Which is weird not to see any planes up there. It's actually kind of nice, you know what I mean? Not to see any planes up there. But Michael Jackson, Marlon Brando, and Grace Kelly all pile into this high-end Mercedes that one of Michael Jackson's producers had that were in the parking garage. I think it was the Waldorf Astoria. And they leave. Michael Jackson driving. So I'm thinking, like, you know, in the aftermath of this horrible thing, I'm thinking, like, this is a cool-ass story. This is a story about Michael Jackson in a car with Marlon Brando and Grace Kelly. Three of the biggest names in the show business that you can get. But how cool is that? It actually took Michael Jackson, and I like Michael Jackson. I know that he had his problems, and he's messed up. And, yeah, you know, he was, I don't know what he did with kids, man. I know there's a lot of shady stuff going on, but Michael Jackson is driving this Mercedes. So they're leaving the city, and they're going to, like, Illinois, so some secret location there, a farm, he said, where they'll be safe. Now, I know Dave Chappelle had a place there, still has a farm there, right, where he wants to move to a farm and raise his kids. So they never said, like, officially where he was going, but I assumed that he just was calling friends and saying, hey, you know, we're going to come over. So they drove from New York City to Illinois. That takes a while, man. That's not some, like, 3 or 4 hour ride. But it took them an extraordinary, Michael Jackson said it took them, this is true, Michael Jackson said it took them an extraordinary amount of time because Marlon Brando kept making him stop at Burger King. This is serious. Marlon Brando was really big at that point. He was big. He was probably 400, 450 pounds. He was huge, you know, huge. Marlon Brando. Mike, stop at this Burger King. I want to have it my way. Okay. Marlon, you just had a Whopper. Mike, you don't worry about the Whopper. I'll worry about the Whopper. You drive the car. Yeah. Okay, Marlon. Elizabeth Taylor sitting there, probably sleeping, snoring. I want to make that movie one day, man. I'm going to make that movie. Because I think that a lot could happen between New York and Illinois with Michael Jackson, Marlon Brando, and Elizabeth Taylor. I want to make the movie while people still know who they are. There's a lot of millennials out there that don't know who anybody is, man. They're like, you say, like, you know, even Gandhi. Someone went the other day, I'm like, yeah, Gandhi, whatever. They're like, who? I'm like, Gandhi. Who's Gandhi? Are you freaking kidding me? It's a guy that wears the diapers, man. You don't know Gandhi? Got a lot of he's got a lot of fortune cookie knowledge, you know, Gandhi. So I don't know. In the news, I'll tell you, man. Well, you know what? 9/11. I don't think we're ever going to know the truth, truth, truth. I think that the truth, truth, truth is so horrible and so ugly that you don't want to know. But I do know that people knew about it. I know that people in the CIA knew about it. There were people in the CIA that actually bought put options on the stocks of the airlines and also the companies involved that morning. And a put is when you basically you're betting against a stock that it's going to go down. So if you bet against it, you put your money in, and the stock goes down, you make money. If the stock goes down, you lose money, you get nothing, right? So these novice people who never you know, use the stock market in their life or played the market, had put options on those airlines and those stocks. That's got to make you think. But the Mossad that warned us, and there were people all over that told us that it was going to happen. Saddam Hussein, I was watching the news at 4 o'clock in the morning because I'm a nighttime type of person, and Saddam Hussein was on there spouting off about stuff as dictators do. And then he said the U.S. was going to get attacked in 2 weeks. This was 2 weeks before 9/11. He said the U.S. was going to get attacked. Now, Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden. It was assumed by Bush, because I think Bush just wanted to kill Saddam Hussein, which he did. When Bush was elected, the reporters asked him, you're going to go after Saddam? And he's like, well, he did try to kill my daddy. He actually said that. He did try to kill my daddy. The president. People are calling Trump a Nazi. You know, that's what gets me, is that I think that Trump actually cares. He's a pig. He's got all kinds of issues. He's a freaking joker. Yeah, man, I get it. He thinks he's a shock jock or something, man. I mean, he's Mr. Show Business. I don't think he has any class. Anything like that, but I don't think he cares. things of Buffalo. But man, so yeah, Saddam died. They found him in a rat hole, took him and hung him, woke him up in his underwear, hung him.
Yep.
You know? But bye, Mr. Dictator. He's gone. But Osama bin Laden, let's think about this. Most of the attackers, most of them, and I mean most of them, were from Saudi Arabia. The bin Laden family is from Saudi Arabia. The bin Laden family is very close to the Bush family. In fact, when George Bush Jr. became president, the bin Laden family gave him like a painting worth $2 million as a gift because he became president. Congratulatory, right? So, and when they decided to go after Saddam, I mean, Saddam bin Laden, Osama bin Laden, they knew where he was. He was in Tora Bora. And the military said, we can get him right now. We have information where he is. We know exactly where he is. We can get him right now. The Bush administration told the military to stand down and not go after Osama bin Laden. Isn't that interesting? So a full, 33 days later, we decided to let them go after him. And by then, he had left Tora Bora with his bodyguards. I understand that he left in the back of a limousine, which is interesting. Big terrorist. Big, tall-ass terrorist driving around a limousine with his bodyguards because he's a rich bitch, you know, worth billions of dollars. Now his son's out there vowing revenge. Revenge for what? You know? Revenge for what? Now, I would just find his house on GPS, man, and shoot a missile right at it, saying that shit. You know? Anybody? Mad Dog Mattis? Anybody? Revenge? How about I'll never forgive and forget. And I know that Islam was the reason that these people were murdered. They did it for their crazy ideology. And there's no way, and I'm looking at Paris, I'm looking at England, you know, I mean, all of France, but look at the cities, look at Paris, or look at London, you know, look at these places. Look at Germany, all Germany, look at Sweden. Sweden just elected a whole bunch of conservatives into the government that are anti-immigration. They don't want illegal aliens. They're tired of the rape gangs, they're tired of getting robbed, tired of all these people hurting them, stealing from them. So, you know what? You have Italy, who's sending over 500,000 of them back to Africa. You have Austria getting rid of these wild, crazy imams, kicking them out, closing down mosques, getting rid of these illegal aliens. They're supposed to be migrants. So you invite them in to save them. Here's shelter. Here's food. Here's free money. No. They want to rape your women and take what you have, destroy your buildings, you know. If you don't follow Islam, they're going to come down on you. So in England, acid attacks, knife attacks, people getting knifed all over the place, killed. The English people, man, they've had it. They have had it. You can't discount the people. You know, I was talking to this dude the other day. Right, who is like this Antifa guy? Somebody just happened to run across, and he's like, "Well, you know, the GOP does not play fair. They're playing dirty, so we're going to play dirty. We're going to hurt people, whatever." I said, "I'm like, listen to this. I'm like, who are you trying to convince of something? Whenever you protest something." You're taking a stance to convince others that there's problems that we all need to look at and solve. So I said, who are you trying to you know, debate? Who are you trying to convince? Who are you trying to bring over to your side or want to see your point of view? He's like, well, you know, people are GOP and, you know, we're trying to make people see. But you're trying with violence and with angry rhetoric, you know? Hurting people, stabbing people, hitting people with bicycle locks, macing people. It's more important that we establish unity. And this is what humans have never freaking figured out. Ever since I came to this planet, I never understood humans. Humans can never figure out. And by the way, I was born in El Paso, Texas, man. In 1966, in the desert, and three wise men showed up and they brought beer and pork rinds. But ever since I came to this planet, I never understood why people don't get that there's power in numbers. Unity. You have a handful of brick scumbag assholes dictating how everybody lives. What we can buy, what we can choose. Oh, you have a big choice for president. This one or that one? Let me see. Do I want this one or that one? Let's see. This one over here is a lying, cheating thief. But that one over there is too. Who do I choose? Devil number one or devil number two? Left wing, right wing, same dirty bird. It doesn't matter. Because the people that run things know that you're all afraid of each other, afraid to talk to each other, afraid to share ideas with each other. Oh, you gotta be afraid of black people. No, black people gotta be afraid of white people. Oh, no, Latinos over there. All those sneaky Asians are gonna come in and take everything you got. Oh, my God. Fear, 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 fear. You know what? Fear is the mind killer. And if you want to mobilize people, if you want people to secure their rights around the world, we have the numbers. So you rise up like a tidal wave and you put a stop to those who make you suffer. Now, that's not whacking somebody on the head with a bicycle lock or spraying them with mace, because those aren't the people that are making you suffer. Those are the regular old people in the streets. One guy got the shit kicked out of him because he was waving around an American flag. He was a Bernie Sanders supporter. And he got pummeled by these Antifa dudes because they said it was a fascist symbol. It's not a fascist symbol. It's a symbol of unity. It's our symbol. We own it. Because other people have distorted it or killed in our name does not mean that those threads in that flag are not the same as the threads of our society. No matter what your background, the best thing about people is that we're all the same and we're all different and we can all learn from each other and we can all enjoy each other. Enjoy, you know what? We all want the same thing. Security for our families. But I'll tell you about these Muslims who are committing crimes. This is how you handle it. Are you listening, Trump? You listening? I know you listen to the show. I'm going to lay it online. Anybody in the world, it's worldwide broadcast. I got people in Iran listening, which is funny. I got people all over the place, which is very, very, very interesting. And Sweden. You know what? It made me change the show in a weird way. It made me pay attention more to the world and not just the headlines, but what goes on. And it's nice having people I can talk to all over the world that are telling me what's going on in their neighborhood. But I'll tell you how to handle these Muslims. Every time one of them commits an act, an atrocity, and they're still alive, you put them in prison and you deport their family. You send them back where they came from. Because the only thing these people care about is their family. It's their religion. Their family is all part of their religion, right? So if there's 15 of them here and one commits the crime and you send 15 of them back, bye. You're going to see that these attacks are going to stop because the attacks aren't part of the plan per se. The plan is infiltration and planting their own laws and doing what they want to do, establishing areas that the police don't go in so they can marry children. So they can do these terrible things marry children. Yeah, that's what they do. Talk about pedophiles in the Catholic Church. By the way, before I end the show, I want to say the Pope came out and he blamed it all on, I'm talking about the child molestation scandal in the Catholic Church. He blamed it on the devil. He said that it's the devil making these bishops come out and expose these priests who have raped children. So it's not the priests who raped the children, and the children aren't victims. It's the devil that did it. The devil's making these bishops come out. And if you believe that, you deserve to be part of that organization. You deserve to have that dirty name of these people who rape children. Rape children. Priests using God to rape children. Recognize evil when you see it. I'm going to end the show. This is Michael Engley. I'm Michael Engley live on United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 Narland, 104.7 Past Christian. And I say a prayer to all the people, all the animals, everybody suffered through that hurricane. And I'm glad that it was downgraded, but it's still a powerful hurricane. Hope you guys are okay. Love y'all. Love y'all. Bye.